I listen to people who don't vote and they say cute little things like, oh, I'm just not interested in politics. Oh, it just encourages the politicians. Oh, they're so boring. Oh, they're all crooks.
If you are not participating, if nobody ever explained to you that you have a responsibility for how this country is going, then you really missed something important there in school. If you are a citizen of the United States of America, it is your responsibility, whether it does well or not. It is up to citizens. We're the ones who run this country.
Turning outrage into outcomes. This is the Texas Blue Action Podcast.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Texas Blue Action Podcast. My name is Lana Hansen. I am the executive director for Texas Blue Action Democrats. And buckle up, y'all, because today we are here to talk about the mask fight in Texas in our schools. And let me tell you, it has been a wild ride. Last summer we saw the Delta variant showed up. Along with it, you know, the consistent misinformation campaign as both of those things spread like wildfire throughout our communities. We sprinkled in a little failure of state level leadership, and then we decided to open schools. And that brought to the table a lot of really upset mama and papa bears. At the same time, our governor, Governor Abbott, decided to issue an executive order that permitted our schools from having a mask mandate, the very thing that helped keep the spread of COVID minimized in our schools last year, which kept them open. And so today I have a great panel of guests with me to discuss this issue. We have Mr. Mike Siegel, who is a civil rights attorney, the political director for Ground Game Texas, and he is also the legal director for Safe Schools for All. We have Tiffany Harrison, who is the trustee for the school board of Round Rock ISD. We have Judge Andy Brown, who is our current Travis County judge. And we will also have Dr. Santiago, who is here as a parent and a physician, and he will join us in a few minutes. And so first, Judge Brown, I would like to start with you and hear your perspective on what it was like to be elected as a local leader to help mitigate these situations in communities and essentially be told by our state level leadership that you didn't have the power to do that.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Lana. It's great to be part of this group. I took office in November, and within 2 months had been sued once by Abbott, and now so far have been sued twice by him, basically because we are at the local level doing what doctors and scientists and teachers want us to do, which is to require masks, especially in the middle of these surges, so that we can get through the surges more quickly, so that our hospitals are not overrun, and most importantly, so that our kids under 12 who can't get vaccinated can stay safe and healthy. And, you know, it's on the one hand, there's been, I think, you know, a general sense of cooperation among trying to get people vaccinated from state level leadership somewhat, although there was frankly no plan from the state level to do it. We kind of had to come up with our own plan locally. But as of late in particular, just the complete, what it seems like, politicization of masking and any sort of science-based safety ways that we're trying to go forward are being thwarted or attempted to be thwarted by the state leadership. I think on, you know, the most recent one is when we worked with Mike and y'all and others here and school districts in looking at how to protect our kids as they go back to school in this latest surge. We entered an order requiring masking in schools here in Travis County. That order still stands. So far, Ken Paxton has not sued us directly for that yet. And so it's, you know, it's interesting that they threw up such a, frankly, fuss about it. They have sued in jurisdictions where I think they feel like they might have more political support. But mm-hmm. So far, they haven't done that here in Austin and Travis County. And I think one of the benefits that is shown is that in AISD, there's just a lower rate of COVID transmission, especially among kids, if you compare it to other school districts that are not following a mask mandate. And what this all really means for us here in Travis County is that as a whole, you know, we're working to get people vaccinated. I think people here generally wear masks, but our hospitals are still overloaded. And that is because people from Travis County only make up about 48, 49% of the people who are in the ICUs and on ventilators and things like that. We're sort of, but we're getting over 19 counties worth of people coming here. Mm-hmm. And so the policies that the state has, which are making it more likely that COVID is going to transmit, are really affecting our safety here in Travis County, because the hospitals are full and we're running the risks at this point where if we had some event where we needed a lot of hospital space, and even on the occasional nights, there's diversions so that people who have appendicitis or other needs might not be able to get a hospital room. And that's frankly directly caused by other counties' policies that feed into our hospitals and the state's overall policies and attitudes towards masking that is just making it really hard for us here locally.
Sure. And I think that you make a really important point in that, you know, masking is a public health issue, right? It's a public health mitigation tool. It is not a political tool, but it has definitely been politicized and has been, you know, become this political issue, right? It's definitely aligned with people's political ideologies. And so we've been very fortunate in Travis County to have leaders like you and parents and trustee members on our, you know, school boards that are willing to step in and do what it takes to protect kids. But you know, my kid who goes to school at AISD doesn't deserve any more protection than the kid in Lubbock or Fredericksburg or, you know, any of the other small areas that do not have local leaders that are willing to step up because they are subscribing to a difficult or a different political agenda. And, you know, I find that heartbreaking, first of all, and second of all, a real failure of our state level leadership. And I think that what we're seeing in those communities as well is that the schools are closing, right? Their numbers are rising. And so many of these schools have had to close down. And that's putting parents in a terrible position. And I think that we're really struggling, like you said, to view this as a community issue that is statewide, right? How do we protect everybody that's attached to this? And you know, with that, I would kind of like to move on to another local leader, Tiffany Harrison, who's here with us and being on a school board and what that has meant for you. I mean, what were your goals when you decided to run to be a school board member? I mean, did you imagine that we would see the craziness in school board meetings that are spitting on microphones and trustees suing other trustees and, you know, all the madness that seems to be happening at Ground Zero, which is school board meetings. Was that something that you ever imagined would happen when you decided to run for this position?
I knew the possibilities were vast. I had been a teacher for 8.5 years. I taught high school marketing at Round Rock High School, so I had seen some things. And I've lived in this Black woman's body for over 30 years. So I know that the world can be cruel. And I know that people can be selfish. And conversely, I know that people can be wonderful, especially students. I did not expect to see what we're seeing now. You know, really none of us have lived through a global pandemic to this magnitude before. So there is no playbook, but I certainly thought that unity and collective care would be central, especially when it comes to children, right? Children are not red or blue. School board is supposed to be nonpartisan. They don't have a choice in the matter. And so some of the ugliness that I'm seeing on behalf and on the part of adults is disheartening. Because all students want to do is be able to go to school. And really, that's my goal, is to be able to keep schools open. You know, we know that students do well in person. And I'm not going to say that all students do well in person, because I certainly think that virtual education provided some safety for students that are already marginalized in various ways. However, we know that many, many students benefit from in-person learning, and that's the goal here, is to keep them in person. And so I didn't imagine that people would be fighting that so hard.
Right. I can imagine. You know, and I think that back to sort of what Judge Brown was saying is that it's important for local leaders to be able to decide what's best for their communities, right? If we do not have high level spread in our communities, we don't need to have the same mitigation tools in place that communities do. And, you know, I just wonder, as a trustee, you know, does it feel like overwhelming pressure from the community to decide what is the best way to, you know, navigate this circumstance?
It certainly does. And to me, I have told parents, I love community engagement. I want to engage with my community. I want to hear from stakeholders. But this is an issue where there is a very clear path. And that path is on the part of public health officials and people who know, doctors, scientists, our local health authorities. And so there is pressure, but I feel like I can sleep at night when I'm advocating for what science is saying we need to do to keep people safe, well, and alive. There's this big dichotomy between life and death, and we act like there's nothing in between with COVID-19. My concern is really, you know, for the people that get COVID and have those long hauler symptoms, you know, for the impacts that are disabling. COVID is a disabling event. And so there is immense pressure. About 85% of our district is crying out for a mask mandate and to make sure that their students are protected because they want to support public schools and they want to support our district. And I really feel like the opposition of that is winning. And there's like there's a difference in the focus of the individual versus the good of the whole. And we really need to be focused on the good of the whole in this situation.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that, you know, again, this is really a public health issue and we know what tools that we need to mitigate and get out of this. And I think that one of the things that is left out of this conversation about something that's different this year is that we do know that the Delta variant has affected children. We do know that it is more widely spread and more contagious. And, you know, one of the things that we'll often hear is, well, it only affects a few children, you know, and as a parent, I think, well, I have a few children, you know, and if it's them, you know, that's devastating to my family and the people around us. And I wouldn't wish that on anybody. When it's a simple mitigation tool as a mask and, you know, taking temperatures and, you know, contact tracing and those types of things. And, I wonder what this means for public education long term. Like, where do you think we go from here in building community relationships and healing sort of this divide, you know, of what this looks like next year or the year after when maybe we do have this virus under control?
I really worry about the future of public education, and I am concerned that it is unsustainable. I think about educators. So as an educator, I did teach 3.5 months into the school year last year until I was elected. It's incredibly difficult to bear the weight of childcare, to bear the weight of so many of the problems of society. And educators have been doing that for a very long time. So you add a global pandemic and you threaten their health and well-being, and that includes mental and physical. Mm-hmm. You know, where do we go from there? We were already in a teacher shortage previously. Will we be able to even sustain what we need to operate schools safely and effectively? And I think even when we get beyond the pandemic, I don't think the educators will forget how disrespectfully they were treated and how we really disregarded their safety.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important point, right? Because right now we're talking mostly, we hear people talking mostly about children and how this is affecting them. But the reality is it's the whole village, right? It's the teachers, the administrators, the janitors, the kitchen staff. It's everybody that makes public health education successful, right? And makes it go around. And we've seen a lot of losses to people that, you know, work in public education as well, in addition to some of the children that we've lost. And I think you're right. I fear that, you know, this is just for so many teachers, they'll never go back. This will be the thing that will end their career, something that they cared about and were good at, and certainly something that we need as part of our society. You know, we such an important role. So thank you for all that you do and for being here today and sharing your insight. And Mike, I would kind of like to, you know, ask you a few questions about, you know, there's a whole legal component that's happened here, right? So we've seen parent school districts, district school, you know, sue parents. We're seeing groups sue the state. I mean, it's just been a roller coaster of litigation that has happened over the course of the month and new lawsuits today, right? So this is an ongoing legal issue as well. And I would love to hear from you, you know, about where you are in that fight and the actions that you have taken as, you know, a parent and an advocate for the parents that need help.
Well, thank you, Lana, and great to hear from Trustee Harrison, who I just want to commend for being so brave and courageous, because the idea that you're a school board trustee and trying to do the right thing to keep kids safe, and then you have to face these vicious attacks, not from the majority of people, but from a very well-organized, very vocal minority, has really changed what it meant to serve on a school board, which traditionally wasn't this super high-profile occupation. So thank you for your service. Big picture, I think the legal fight has been in service of the organizing that parents and kids and school workers have been doing. This isn't a case where the legal fight is front and center in determining the facts on the ground. Really, it's parents who are organizing and convincing their school boards to take protective action, like imposing a mask rule. They've been the leaders. But what the legal fight has been able to do is provide another layer of protection to support parents and school boards doing the right thing. And so there's been a whole bunch of different lawsuits, and I will try not to bore anyone with the procedural details, but basically you have these state court lawsuits and federal lawsuits. Those are the two big categories. And the state court lawsuits have been focused on the idea that Governor Abbott, his authority to ban mask rules is under his emergency authority under the Texas Disaster Act. And so he says, this is an emergency and I need to take action. But the problem is he's used his authority not to make Texans safer. Under the Disaster Act, you're supposed to be evacuating people from a disaster, making sure supply lines are maintained, that people can get food and shelter and all the support you need during a disaster. What he has done is taken away a protective measure during a disaster, during a health pandemic. And so a lot of these lawsuits have said, you know what, Governor Abbott, you are abusing your authority. You are acting without authority, ultra vires is the technical term, by banning mask orders during a health pandemic. And I would say that there was a first wave of these lawsuits, and I represented parents at Eanes, Pflugerville, and Manor ISDs, all within the Travis County area. And we were a part of lawsuits that basically protected 1.2 million students, some of the biggest school districts in the state. And we sued and we had obtained protective orders and injunctions that allowed a large number of school districts to continue their mask orders. So this was a huge victory in litigation that essentially supported the organizing that was already happening. And so I feel really good about the role of lawyers in litigation. Oftentimes it can be a distraction, people like, oh, the lawyers got it. I don't have to do anymore, And that could be a negative aspect of legal fights. But I think here, organizations like Safe Schools for All and others, the parents were on the front lines convincing 80 or 100 school districts to take protective action. Then the lawyers stepped up and said, okay, we're going to give you a layer of protection. So, Trustee Harrison, you may get sued at some point, but, maybe we can delay that by a couple months with an injunction. And so that's largely what happened. So I would say the lawsuits helped maintain the status quo, which is essentially that over 1 million students have been protected by mask orders in Texas this fall. And we know what that means, because all we have to do is compare a district like Austin ISD that has had a mask order consistently with a district like Lago Vista or Conroe, unfortunately the worst. And the numbers are so stark. It's like, an infection rate of 10 times or more for these districts without mask orders. And so we know we're doing good things. At the same time, I don't know if the listeners are people who have been part of the voting rights battles or the abortion rights battles, but whatever political fight you've been a part of, you know that we can't rely on judges to do the right thing, because so much of our judiciary at this point in time, 2021, is politicized. And so what that means is, we can win at the trial court level, then even we might be able to win at the Court of Appeals, but once we get to the Supreme Court, 9 Republicans all elected in Republican primaries, we have very little chance of succeeding there. And the same thing in federal court, you can get a victory at stage one, but you're going to a very conservative court in stage two. And so there's limits. So far, just to kind of complete the answer, the federal litigation has not been successful in winning any additional protections. I've been really sad to see that. I mean, there was a very important lawsuit brought on behalf of disabled students and families. That so far has not obtained any relief. There's a couple of class action lawsuits that are probably going to move too slowly to really get relief this fall. And so where we're at right now is, 1.2 million or so students are protected by mask orders. Recently, the Texas Education Agency has said, for a while, we were saying we are not going to enforce GA 38, which is Abbott's emergency order. That's the order that tells school board trustees that we might fine you if you try to impose a mask order. For a while, the TEA wasn't enforcing that. Now they're saying, we can't enforce it. And that has kind of opened up the doors to Ken Paxton, our least favorite, you know, public lawyer to go ahead and sue all these school districts, including Round Rocks, to try to enforce Governor Abbott's order. So that's where we're at right now. The status quo is still good, but I think we're going to see a further retrenchment because, you know, Paxton's on the rampage. He's suing everyone he can. And the facts on the ground, like, for example, Travis County might go from stage 5 to stage 4. That's just going to give more license to folks like Paxton to sue, say, you know what, we don't need mask orders anymore. And so I think he's going to try to get as many of those taken down as possible.
So, Mike, that's a really interesting point, right? Because they did go through a phase where both Abbott and Paxton and the TEA kind of walked it back a little bit and said, you know, while things are in litigation, we're going to just see what happens, right? And then they've sort of delayed resolving that. And now the numbers are starting to come down a little bit. All of a sudden they're throwing, you know, their full weight behind, you know, where they were a month ago. I mean, do you think that that's politically motivated? Do you think it's that the numbers are protecting them? Why would they flip-flop like that?
No, absolutely. I'll take off my lawyer hat for a second, put on my pants. Yeah. I mean, frankly, this is Governor Abbott running for governor and running for president in 2024 and trying to appease the most, I guess, hardcore elements of his Republican base. Because on the one hand, they didn't want unnecessary deaths this fall that depend on Abbott and the TEA folks. On the other hand, it's very threatening that 100 school districts defied Governor Abbott and basically said, you know what, I don't care what your piece of paper says, I'm going to do what's right to protect kids and families and school workers. And I think it's turned into a huge political liability for them. And so they want to change the narrative. They don't want the narrative to be courageous trustees saving lives like Tiffany Harrison and Round Rock. They want the narrative to be, these scofflaws, these people who refuse to follow the rule of law, and they need to be held accountable. So they're trying to flip the script. I hope they're not successful, but it really is going to be on all of us to continue to organize politically from the school board level on up to make sure people remember who was fighting for safety and who wasn't.
Right. And I think that's a really important point, and where I'd really like to bring Dr. Santiago into this conversation is that, you know, when this started, when we were looking at the doors to schools opening and as parents not having the same layer of protection in place that we did last year, and knowing that this variant was surging, hearing calls from local pediatricians and hospital officials, you know, begging for there to be mask mandates, letting us know that schools were that hospitals were filling up, you know, parents like myself that have two kids under 12 were really panicking. You know, I was thinking, my kids are so excited to go back to school. I want them in school. It's the best place they can be. What do we do here? And we did start rallying together. And, you know, one of the things that Mike and I partnered on and where we met Mr. Santiago was, was through Creating Safe Schools for All, where we did see 4,000 volunteers from across the state join the efforts that were parents, just like you and I. Mike, I know you have children here that are also under 12, that didn't know what to do and wanted to make sure that we were sending not only our children, but our neighbors' children and our friends down the street, you know, their children to school in the most safe and effective manner as possible. And, you know, Dr. Santiago lives in a district that has refused to put in a mask mandate in Louisville ISD. He's been a staunch advocate for that, and I know has had, you know, parent support there. And I just would love to hear from you about what that has been like for you, that experience being also a physician in the community and speaking out for science. And if you've seen it as more of a political issue where you live, or if you've seen people from sort of both sides of the aisle come together to fight for masking.
Well, thanks for having me on. I think there are clear political fault lines in the mask debate, the pandemic mitigation measures, at least here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area where my school district is located. In our push for broader evidence-based best practices pandemic mitigation, there are clear political fault lines in that. And when I've spoken before my school board on two occasions, once in August and once in September this month, and when the other parents who are opposed to any kind of a mask mandate or further pandemic mitigation get to the podium, there is a strong tinge of political discourse and their rationale. And some of them are quite outright in terms of their political allegiances, support of certain candidates, political officials, and so forth in that debate. So there's no question that, and that's really kind of not much of a surprise to me as a physician, that we are seeing such a big political fault line in our community develop around best practices and evidence-based medicine in terms of pandemic mitigation. I was in private practice in this community for 20 years before I retired to pursue interests in Native American health. So there were no questions that in the patients that I took care of in my community here in North Texas for 20 years, that there were certain people of certain demographics that I knew would be dismissive, less likely to cooperate, and disregard my expertise or my medical advice. So in a sense, what I see in terms of what parents and people are doing in this pandemic in disregarding expertise, disregarding scholarship, evidence, science, is not really any surprise. It's a culmination of something, a trend that I have seen for a good 20 years in private practice.
And so tell me a little bit about what numbers look like in your community. I mean, have you seen a you know, large spread within your schools? Have your schools been able to stay open? What is it looking like for you right now where your children go to school?
Well, you know, I live in Denton County. Denton County has a population of about 902,000 people. So it's the second biggest suburban county in Texas after Collin County next door to us, which has 1.2 million people. And in Denton County, about 26% of our population is under the age of 19. So that comes out to about 225,000 people in Denton County who are pediatric age. And that's the group of people that we've been kind of tracking COVID cases in from our daily releases of data from Denton County Public Health. Before school started, the per 100,000 incidence of COVID cases in age group 19 and under was only about 21.2. So it was not great, but it was low. And that number over the course of about 4 weeks quadrupled. And so we saw a rapid diminishment of ICU capacity. There had been days where here in Denton County, a county of nearly 1 million people, we had zero ICU beds left. Mm-hmm. It's a common story in the news that the pediatric ICUs in Fort Worth and in Dallas, where most of our pediatric COVID cases would have to go if they do deteriorate, were full. So case numbers definitely just within the age, the pediatric age group had quadrupled over the course of the first 4 weeks of school. Now, if we were to compare the caseload across all ages in our county here in North Texas, generally children were experiencing a prevalence of about twice that of everyone else in the county. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that there was no mask mandate in any of the schools. Now, Denton ISD did pass a temporary mask mandate, which they decided to end yesterday because cases were on the downslope. But history has shown, going all the way back to the 1918 H1N1 pandemic, that the most critical phase of pandemic mitigation is when you're on the backslope. When things seem to be getting better, that's where you really require your staying power in pandemic mitigation. And that's not something that we are seeing. And while we have seen some localized data that does indicate that perhaps things are improving, we're still within the range of things that could, from like Labor Day gatherings, continued school activities. So our pandemic measures, the two most prominent measures of pandemic assessment, test positive rate, which is still above 10%, and at some points here in the last 4 weeks was approaching 15%, meaning that 15% of COVID tests done in our county were positive. You have to be below 10% to really say, okay, you know what, we're getting a handle on things. And you have to be below a 5% test positive rate to really say, okay, I think things are safer. Community spread is not occurring at a widespread scale. We are still not below 10% in this county, even though there have been several days of improvements. The other pandemic measure comes from the UT Houston School of Public Health. When there are more than 25 new daily cases per 100,000 people, we know that COVID is spreading unmitigated through the community. We have been at greater than 25 new daily cases per 100,000 people in Denton County since the beginning of August. We're nowhere near a level that the accepted measures of pandemic assessment used by the epidemiology, science, medicine, and our own schools of public health here in Texas would regard as remotely safe for not having a mask mandate.
Right. And I think that is a really important point, that what you mentioned about, you know, getting the numbers under control and having different layers of mitigation. I think there's a lot of rhetoric around people saying that we're going to impose masks forever and that this is going to be a part of what schools always require. And from any trustee that I've talked to or any schools that we have been engaged in, it's very much just about mitigating it now. And then when we get the numbers under control, looking at different options, right? Not having mask mandates once we get to a certain threshold. And so I think it's important as we're having these discussions to let people know that, like, this is not what we want things to look like long term. None of us want that. I don't want my kid to have to wear a mask in school long term either, right? But it's what we need to do now as a community to protect each other, because the other rhetoric that we hear is, well, you still have a choice to wear a mask. And that is true, but me wearing a mask protects you. My kid wearing a mask protects your unmasked kid. And so that is not bringing me comfort to send my child to school and know that parents who aren't taking this seriously have the right to have their child there unmasked, right? Because that's putting my child at risk while my child is protecting them. And I also want to address the rhetoric that is, you know, well, it's terrible that you're all living in fear all the time, you know, because I don't fear this virus necessarily. I mean, we certainly don't want to get it as a family. What I fear is a community that's not willing to do what it takes to protect each other. I fear the people that don't think my child's life matters as much as their child not needing to wear a mask to school because it's uncomfortable. And so, I think that there's so many conversations that need to continue around this topic that are really based in not just this virus, but also how we view our neighbors and what's happening in our state politically and across the nation as well. And, I really want to thank all of you for being here today. I appreciate your insight. But, you know, one thing that we do every episode is talk to people about how they can take action. And the one of the things that I want to say to everybody who's listening right now is, when you leave this conversation, please look up when your next school board meeting is. Find out how you can get involved with candidates that are running. It is important. Those down ballot races, our county judge races, having supporters like Judge Brown in our corner is important when things like this happen. So everybody, please start looking at those people that are not the shiny objects at the top of the ticket, but the ones that are down ballot that make a big difference in your day-to-day life and how you can get involved and support those people. I also really want you to, take a minute, and if your board of trustees are doing what you appreciate and you're proud of them, please reach out and give them a pat on the back, because they're all working really hard right now, or your county judge to do what's right. And, you know, they're facing real opposition with real issues. And, last, I'd like to say thank you to Progress Texas, of course, for hosting us today. Again, thank you to all my guests and, you know, your incredible insight that you have shared today. And anybody who's interested, please check out blueactiondems.com. We would love to help you organize your neighbor and elect great leaders across the state. And I hope you'll join us again next week. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Blue Action Podcast, a production in affiliation with Progress Texas. Texas Blue Action is founded on progressive grassroots action, focused on year-round neighborhood organizing and committed to building sustainable democratic infrastructure in Texas. We turn out the voters that the Texas GOP fears the most. Production by me, Chris Mosier. Theme music generously provided by James McMurtry. Join Texas Blue Action at blueactiondems.com. And also on Twitter and Facebook. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you again next week.